So it feels appropriate before we begin. This class is a continuation of our foundational teachings series, and we're working on the hindrances. I'll introduce the hindrances in general, and then this is the hindrance of what I like to call worldly obsession, and then its antidotes, how we practice with it. But it feels appropriate to just take a moment to, I mean, in a way, it makes me sad to do it, and I'd rather not think about it, but I guess just take a moment to call to mind the situation we are in approaching possible war, and particularly the fires in Australia threatening people and creatures. And there's a Buddhist tradition of, we offer prayers, offer goodwill, not because we believe that there's some kind of supernatural being that is going to hear those prayers, or that we're going to have some kind of real tangible effect, but we don't know the positive outcomes of our actions. And at the very, very least, just making space in our own hearts and minds for goodwill feels like the right thing to do. Let's take a moment and pray for peace and wisdom. A great vow Zen monastery, their daily chanting, they have a dedication they do about how they hope world leaders will be, you know, guided by wisdom and compassion and patience and whatever they see, including President Trump. They say his name, so we can pray. I got this out just because I wanted to try to make this class a little less kind of talking head and you sit and imbibe, and a little more, I don't know. My ideal of a class, I've just imprinted on my honors English teacher in high school. And we would read, and then he would have these questions for us. And he would just ask us these questions, and it was like the first time that I had ever been really asked in a class to really engage the material and think and respond and whatever. So hopefully I will inspire you to do that. So just an intro to the Buddhist five hindrances. So in Buddhism, there's a million different lists. There's the Eightfold Noble Path and the Fourfold Noble Truth, and there's a six of this and seven of that, and this is another list, and this is the five hindrances. So the idea is that any obstacle in meditation or practice or life can be categorized as one of these five hindrances. And so they are, it's often called sensual desire, but I'll explain, but I kind of like to call it worldly obsession, ill will, sloth and torpor. So that's, it's kind of like not two things, it's like sloth and torpor. When we get to that class, I'll explain more, but it's kind of like the sloth is our unwillingness to strive, and then the torpor is the dullness of mind and body that results, which leads to more sloth, which leads to, so it's kind of a two-part thing. The fourth one is hindrance is restlessness and worry. So it's another hyphenated one, another kind of more complex experience. It's not just anxiety, and then the fifth one is skeptical doubt, or sometimes called uncertainty. So the idea is to become mindful of the hindrance, to notice a hindrance, and then work to become free of the hindrance. And in some ways, this is I find it a helpful way to look at our experience, because we're less likely to look at these things as a personal character flaw and more just as, oh, look, you know, this hindrance has arisen in me. And it's a universal human experience. It's something that happens. And, you know, once it arises, then we try to do something positive with it. So here's from the Pali Canon about the five hindrances, the oldest text of Buddhism. So the Blessed One, or the Buddha, said, "These five obstacles, hindrances that overwhelm awareness and weaken discernment." Which five? Sensual desire is an obstacle, a hindrance that overwhelms awareness and weakens discernment. Ill will, sloth and drowsiness, restlessness and anxiety. Uncertainty is an obstacle, a hindrance that overwhelms awareness and weakens discernment. When a monk has not abandoned these five obstacles, when he is without strength and weak in discernment, it is impossible for him to understand what is for his own benefit, to understand what is for the benefit of others, to understand what is for the benefit of both, to realize a superior human state, a truly noble distinction in knowledge and vision. So essentially, when these hindrances are present, we really can't practice and we really can't live skillfully. And he says, then he makes an analogy. Suppose there were a river flowing down from the mountains, going far, its current swift, carrying everything along with it. And a man would open channels leading away from it on both sides, so that the current in the middle of the river would be dispersed, diffused, and dissipated. It wouldn't go far. Its current wouldn't be swift, and it wouldn't carry everything along with it. So in this case, like the hindrances are like dispersing our river of intention and concentration. And then there's, I just want to share with these so that you get an overview of the five hindrances. And there's two different suttas in the Pali Canon. One compares the hindrances to various obstacles to trying to see our reflection in the surface of water in a pail. And then there's another metaphor that I'll offer as well. So worldly obsession or sensual desire is like trying to see your reflection in the water, in this pail, if the water's been made opaque with dyes and substances. So it's just thick and murky, it's not reflective. So that's what the worldly obsession does to it. And then the other metaphor for worldly obsession is enjoying things while incurring debt. Debt you'll have to pay later, with interest, often with some form of suffering. Now, ill will is like trying to see your reflection in the water when the water is boiling. And the other metaphor is that it's like being a sick person who can't enjoy physical ease and good health. So an angry person can't enjoy spiritual ease and good health. Sloth and torpor, that's like the water is covered with algae and slime. And it's like being stuck in a cramped, dark prison. Restlessness and worry, it's like seeing the water is ruffled by the wind. And it's like being a slave, constantly at the beck and call of someone else. So that kind of restlessness and worry and mental preoccupation that can be so upsetting is like you're at the beck and call of someone else. Uncertainty or skeptical doubt, that's like not only trying to see a reflection in turbid water that's been stirred up, but the whole pail's been hidden away in the dark. Like you can't see it. And then I really like this one too. It's like somebody traveling in the desert who has become lost and has no map. So in terms of the importance of abandoning the hindrances, Tanisiro Bhikkhu, one of my favorite monks and scholars, says, these hindrances need to be abandoned because they function as intermediate levels of the three roots of unskillfulness. That's another list. Greed, hate, and delusion. So sensual desire is a form of greed. Ill will, a form of aversion. And the remaining three hindrances, forms of delusion. All five in their various ways block concentration and weaken discernment, making it difficult to realize what is beneficial for oneself, for others, or both. And when we are caught in these with these hindrances, they tend to have intoxicating, self-perpetuating quality. So we lose our ability to see how they're harmful when we get really caught up in them. So tonight's hindrance, the Pali word for it is kamachanda. So sensual desire or worldly obsession. So kama with one M, not with two. Two is the law of cause and effect. Kama with one M means sense pleasures, but it's not just like sensual pleasures like food or beautiful things or something. It's any conditional source of pleasure or satisfaction, including fame, power, beauty, prowess, possessions, exciting experiences, new relationships, etc. So, I'll write it up here. So it is kamachanda, and I guess, I mean, I already rattled off a few, but other objects of kamachanda, other things that are the focus of our worldly obsession.
Nice house. Yeah. Social media.
Nicer car. Yeah, that can definitely be, I mean, you know, in a way, like these can be positive things, things that we really do take satisfaction and pleasure in. They're just, you know, they're conditional things that come and go. And
so what were the things you rattled off?
Fame, power, beauty, prowess, being good at stuff. I like
money.
That. See, money.
TikTok. TikTok.
TikTok notoriety.
No, it's kind of a it's
social media.
Yeah, it's social media.
Attention.
Android.
That's a good one. Attention.
Attention. I mean, even like love. I mean, love is a good thing, but it also can be something that we really long for. Yeah.
Hobbies.
Entertainment. Fitness?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That's such a good one.
Well, I was going to add sports.
Oh,
youth.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Okay. Yeah. Youth.
Obsession with youth.
Excitement.
Status.
Oh, that's good.
Winning. What's that funny?
I'm sure we could go on, but at least this will be up there to spark our. So I can tell you, I will go on to talk about what the Buddhist idea of Kamachanda is, but I would imagine that you guys can come up with an answer as well. So what, I mean, how would you define the hindrance of worldly obsession? You know, at what point does longing for these things, striving for these things, become a hindrance? That's like, you know, dispersing our river or catching us up so that we lose track of what's really helpful.
Because you never reach satisfaction. When you get the newer house, you're just looking for the next house. You're never satisfied with the house you live in.
Yeah.
Also, in general, these things can be very distracting. If you're trying to practice every day, these things can be very distracting to the path you're on.
But ultimately, I mean, none of them are really bad things in and of themselves. You know, a little bit of luck to survive.
Yeah.
In and of themselves, they're ultimately unsatisfactory. They're not going to lead to any permanent, lasting, or nothing that exists. But they're permanent.
Yeah, that's good. Impermanent.
Yeah, I was thinking futility. My fitness answer was based on a conversation I had with a guy today where fitness was his proxy for living forever. So there was this sense of that obsession will not produce the result you want.
Kind of an overestimation of how awesome this is going to be. I don't know how to put that, but... I don't know, over expectation or something.
Over evaluation.
I think when it creates an imbalance in a person's life, when they lose that sense of balance across all the things that they need to keep in mind.
And I guess I would put, I mean, there's different ways to put this, but kind of an intoxication where, like, I don't know about you, but like, when I start to go down the road for one of these things, I don't want to give it up. I don't, you know, even if part of me is like, wait a second, like, things are getting out of balance here, but I'm like, no, I got a new laptop around Black Friday. And I've shopped, you know, carefully for it, so I make a right choice. But like, I don't know, for like 2 weeks beforehand, it was like this kind of weird zone I would get into, and like, you know, what should I get? What should I get? But, oh. So we have it that these things, just the pursuit of them never ends, that they can be distracting, that they're impermanent, that we have an over-expectation or evaluation of how incredibly rewarding or wonderful these are going to be. They produce imbalance in our lives, and the pursuit of them is intoxicating. It takes us over.
It's obsessive.
Yeah.
Obsessive.
these things can lead to self-harm or harm to others. And I don't know how to express this correctly, but how much of it is really real?
What?
Real. I mean, fitness as an example, I see young women lifting weights, working on their shoulders in ways that I know they are going to suffer badly.
Mm.
And so what? So they have great shoulders. So what? Is that going to make you happy, really? Are you happy now? I don't know. You know what I mean? So you have a huge house. So you live at the top of the hill. So you have 1,000 friends on Facebook. So what? Are you happy?
That's why it's a hindrance.
Hmm?
That's why they call it a hindrance.
Yeah.
Because you don't realize
yeah.
that you're not happy. You think
yeah.
you are. Or you think it'll make you.
I guess there's some assumption too that there's an aspiration beyond this, that's the kind of benchmark, this aspiration, and these things are taking you away from that. Unfortunately, there's not a big shared aspiration in our culture, at least.
That's true. I think a lot of people, what else are they going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, they might even admit that these things aren't ultimately fulfilling, but then what else is there? So hopefully that's something in our spiritual practice that we start to develop a sense of.
And I guess they don't find that what else, it's like a treadmill, they keep going. Maybe if I had a bit more, then that would be the thing, you know? They don't know what else to do.
Yeah. And what is the, I guess, kind of experientially, you know, I shared a little bit about my experience, but the, you know, in a way, fine, there's appreciation. We need to get another car, or we need to whatever, or we need to pursue a new relationship or whatever. And we can appreciate these things and enjoy these things, enjoy our garden, enjoy a good meal, whatever. So like at what point in your experience do you recognize it's starting to morph into a hindrance?
I don't mind sharing something. It's a little embarrassing, though. When I first started sitting here, I realized in 2015, I came across an old journal recently, actually. And I remember sitting here being new and, you know, the bell rang and we're going, and I'm just like, I'm the best meditator. I have the, you know, wow, I'm really here right now. I bet I'm like the most here person. Like, I hear that person is fidgeting. You know, and it's like embarrassing because it's so not my personality to be like that. But it took me a while to really settle into it and realize even just the fact that I think that being the best meditator is some aspiration shows my immaturity. Along the path, you know, so, you know, piety was I'd be very pious about it. It was a hindrance, and it took some working through that to realize, like, no, this is not the point. It's not to bow, you know, the most times or, you know, all those.
Well, and that's a perfect example of how we can turn our spiritual practice into just more of this stuff. Especially, you know, if you practice in a community for a while and somebody is, you know, really diligent and they're like, their understanding is acknowledged and they start being asked to teach classes or something, you know, like this status stuff starts to come out in spiritual communities and like, ooh, you know, it's like, oh, I want that. I want, you know, the recognition. I want the... Or even at a certain level, just wanting the experience. Like, I really want to feel really wise, or I really want to feel really compassionate. But it can still really be about us and our experience, I will be such an amazing person that everybody will love me.
Spiritual materialism. Like the catchphrase.
Yeah.
It's when you take all of that longing and aspiration into your practice or into your religious path and just perpetuate.
And then you know you're superior to all those people who just want the material things. Oh, you just want a car, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I found in life one of the best lessons I ever had was finding three people who were better at what I was good at.
Mm.
And that's one reason why I went to grad school, because I cruised through undergrad because I didn't, there was no one around to challenge me much.
Mm.
And it was like, well, you know, I didn't have to study, I got decent grades, well, how good am I really? So I went to grad school, and I met a number of people who were much, much better at being a student, being a scholar than I was. You know, it really sort of, you know, placed my, helped me establish who I was in this world. So knowing and acknowledging those people that are better at what you're good at is important. You can learn from them, but also you can learn, but you can never really compete against them. I mean, a couple of people I met were absolutely incredible scholars. Unless you're gifted with what they have.
Yeah. It's always somebody.
Enjoy their radiance.
Better than you. Yeah. You want to say that?
For me, like, it's when I stop being happy with what I do have, like, it becomes a problem. It's just like, because I remember in high school I told myself, well, I'm suffering so much right now, but it's fine. When I get to college, everything's going to be great, I'm going to start living my life, get to college, and I've got all these new things that's going on. It's like, oh, this is terrible. Well, don't worry, when I'm done with college and I've got a job, everything's going to be great, I'll have all this time to get there too. And it's like, all right, this is not working. This is not. And that was a real crisis for me of like, why is this not working? And it is, because I always figured that there was something better along the way and that I, this isn't good enough or whatever. So I was embarrassed. I don't think it's wrong to necessarily pursue things, at least from my perspective. I don't know. But it's when I start not being happy with what I do have that it becomes like distressing for me.
That's a good point.
Another thing I found in life is, yeah, sometimes it is greener over there, and when you get there, enjoy it. Be satisfied. I mean, that's how I ended up in Oregon. I wasn't really happy with the other places I had been living. So I ended up here like, yeah. This is it, I stay here. Dissatisfaction can be a good motivator, but you have to know when you're actually satisfied.
Yeah.
I think for me, hindrances kick in when I'm using these items, these things, as a way to kind of escape, essentially. Like, I'm not happy with where I am or who I am. It's a little bit like addiction, I think.
Yeah.
And then also there's an element of self-harm. Like, you keep doing it past the point of being good for you.
Yeah, leading to debt or leading to addiction. You know, the wholesome appreciation of worldly pleasures. I think it's entirely possible to enjoy them without, you know, holding on to them. But it's subtle. Like, I even found myself when I end up getting out for a hike, which isn't all that often, you know, a few times a year, and it's so nice. And then, like, I'm immediately thinking, like, all right, how can I do this more often? Like, you know, it's like I want some more. Like, this makes me feel good, so I need to get some more of it. Like, just to hike, you know, that you're wasting your hiking time dreaming of how you're going to go hiking more often. Yeah, so without, I mean, it's hard. We do end up wanting to, like, get some more, but it's possible to just enjoy that. And then we've talked a lot about where it becomes a hindrance. Focusing on some particular pleasure. Becoming oblivious to everything else, I think, is a good sign that it's become a hindrance. Overestimating how the wonderful the fulfillment of our desire is going to be. So, share with you something really neat. In this term, kama chanda, this is from a talk given by Ajahn Brahmavamsa, another Theravadan monk and scholar. He says, in the Pali term kama chanda, chanda is what you have to do if you cannot attend a meeting of the community of monks and you want to give approval and agreement to what's happening there. You give your chanda to go ahead in your absence. It's agreement, approval, consent. So this is much more subtle than mere desire. This means you are buying into, giving into this. You want it. You approve of it. You allow it to happen. In the same way that we have chanda in the Vinaya, monastic regulations, we have kama chanda. It's as if you give your approval for the sensory world to be in your consciousness, in your mind. You accept it, approve of it. You play with it. That's all chanda. It's letting it completely occupy the mind. And it's much more subtle than mere desire. Kind of like that. It's not just enjoyment, desire, or even, you know, dissatisfaction driving you to maybe make some changes. It's kind of like you're giving over your mind to the contemplation of and searching for these conditional things. So in terms of gaining some freedom of choice around how we spend our energy, allowing ourselves to devote ourselves more fully to activities unrelated to our self-centered desires or to, you know, less conditional things, meditation, study, service, being present with other people. So there's 5 or 6 steps or approaches. So one is mindful awareness. So that's what in the Buddha's teachings, he talks about, when he talks about the hindrances, he said that's the first step, is noticing, you know, this hindrance has arisen in me. And sometimes that's, even just that is enough. You know, my just noticing, all right, you know, when I'm in my like third hour of computer research, and, you know, I haven't gotten up to, like, have lunch. It's like, It looks like the hindrance of worldly obsession has arisen in me. And so we really have to, that's the first step. If we don't notice that a hindrance has arisen, then chances are we're just going to be kept going on it. And then we notice what are the nutriments. What is feeding this hindrance? What is fueling it or allowing it to continue? So I'll throw that open again for what kind of things feed and encourage.
So
what is the nutriment? Nutriment of kama chanda. What kind of things?
You could say it's easy to keep on doing what you're doing.
Just continue.
Yeah.
Power.
But I guess, like, what are some examples of, you know, what might you be doing that you continue and it makes the Kama Chanda worse?
Could be lack of self-worth. That keeps you looking for, say, attention over the house or anything, or just lack of feeling comfortable in your own skin.
Well, that might be a cause of it, but that's not exactly what a nutriment is. Like, in the moment when you are experiencing the hindrance, what feeds it?
Likes.
Hmm?
Thumbs ups on Facebook.
Oh. Likes, and or even just like gratification, right? Yeah. Like momentary.
Are you asking, like, what is it giving you? Like, what?
Or, yeah, like.
Like, what are you getting out of it at the moment that it's worth?
I mean, so nutriment is like feed, you know, it's feeding. What's feeding and fueling it?
Sort of continuing to say, like, procrastination. Like, if you're procrastinating and you're just wasting time on social media and you know you have to be doing things, but it's easier to just not do those things, continue with social media.
So you can just.
Well, I think in my own personal case, I think I have this false sense that it's going to come to an end any minute now. And then an hour goes by.
So it's like there's a, what would you say, a sense, I don't know, like.
Like it's 5 more minutes.
I'll just put that down. Just 5 more minutes. Like, that just kind of sums it up.
And then you waste a lot of time. A lot.
It's like also little highs that you get. What is that reward? The dopamine better.
Yeah.
The desire, I'm not entirely sure enough, but the desire for the experience of the first time. So for the first time you have a particular food, it's like, oh, wonderful discovery, and you eat it for a week, and by Friday, it's not so interesting anymore. And you know, people can get obsessed with that first new experience, the new experience.
Well, and that can be another motivation, but in terms of the nutriments, maybe it's more helpful to think of these are things that you could deprive the situation of. These are things that you could take away from the situation or stop, and then the hindrance would fizzle out. Or
would pride be a nutriment, like, or a motivation? That's how I'm. Because if you checked your pride, then it could balance.
Well, I guess I'm thinking more in terms of like, okay, so my, like, I'm searching for the computer. The nutriment is the Best Buy website. Like, it's that like actually spending time doing that is feeding the experience.
For me, it's just having chocolate in the house.
I'm obsessed with
it. Like, first thing, I'm sensitive, so I have to eat it in the morning. So I get up and think of chocolate. If it's not in the house, it's okay.
Well, the nutriment for me is time. If I think I have the time, I will just waste my afternoon on it.
So
if
it's
I had a busier schedule or you know a commitment or something, I would put it until tomorrow.
Or maybe even attention.
I want to say something like fear of missing out. There's this sense of if this wasn't in my life would be so much grimmer and grayer. I have to keep.
But I would count that again as kind of like that's a delusion. It's a cause, but it's not so much like. I mean, I guess you could try to convince yourself that wasn't the case.
Well, once you recognize that something's unhealthy, though, you'll quite often continue doing it, even though you know that, because you're kind of like, well, the alternative is kind of crap.
Yeah.
It's really kind of pain, it's pain avoidance.
Yeah.
It's that hurt that you avoid by focusing your attention on all those things that you had on that list.
Yeah.
You don't have to be reflective of yourself.
Also, a sunk cost fallacy. If you've been doing it for long enough, you just keep on doing it because you're like, you're invested so much time already.
Mm.
Like, why change now?
Yeah, and that's kind of that 5 more minutes thing too. Like, you know, just because now that I've done all this, and I gotta buy a laptop because I spent, you know, 8 hours figuring it out. Yeah, so the nutriments are, I mean, anything that really, really like behavioral that you are doing, that something that, you know, you could take that element out of the system somehow, or redirect that nutriment, and this, the hindrance will be diffused somewhat. So the third, and people have touched on this a little already, is to reflect on the negative consequences of allowing this hindrance to continue, which might be
remorse. For me, it's remorse. I can't believe I wasted the entire afternoon doing that, and I still don't have it.
Yeah. So this is negative consequences. Remorse, debt.
You're missing a piece in your life.
Futility.
I would add loss. Loss of health, loss of
relationships,
right?
Guilt.
Longing for
realizing you're just gonna keep feeding it and having that experience of dissatisfaction.
Or moving on and longing for what you left behind.
Things that you missed out on because you were doing this thing's an opportunity cost.
And that, I mean, in a way, this is kind of like that, an imitation of that list of like the negative. When we recognize when it's turned into a hindrance, these kinds of things start to happen.
Presence lost the ability to be present.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, and that lack of balance, you know, where again, it's like, we're not saying don't enjoy these things, but when things get out of balance, then, you know, you've neglected the stuff that you have, or the people in your life, or, you know, do harmful things. So that's the mindful awareness that the hindrance has arisen, noticing nutriments that are feeding it that you might be able to deprive it of, reflecting on the negative consequences, and then redirection. So this is an interesting one where I've never had a lot of success with this kind of, because my mind just fights itself, but there's a lot of really classic Buddhist meditations and practices that are prescribed as antidotes to things like the hindrances. So the traditional antidote to kamachanda is meditating in a graveyard. As you know, reminding yourself, and let's just say, like, the Buddha's time, there weren't no clean meadow of a graveyard like our graveyards. They were charnel grounds. They were, you know, bodies that were being burned. They were, you know, it was very graphic. So, I mean, it was spending, reminding yourself of impermanence, reminding yourself, you know, you're going to lose all of this. What is really important, you know, to not be so distracted in the meantime that you neglect spiritual practice, or you neglect being a kind and generous person, or, you know, the things that end up really mattering. So, you know, meditating in charnel ground, not for everyone, but there was also mentally, because a lot of times, we didn't really get into this, but a lot of times the sensual desire is, it's lust and sexual desire, and we get completely obsessed with a person, and that's the same thing. I mean, it's love and relationship is wonderful, but it can just, you know, be all-consuming and distracting and lead to imbalance. In which case, you contemplate, you mentally break things down into their components. You remind yourself that your loved one has, like, pus and blood and snot inside and, you know, bones and... you know, and this is very literal, but I mean, in a mellower version of that is, in a way, would just be reminding ourselves of, you know, trying to remind ourselves that this thing that we want is not going to be as lasting and wonderful and fulfilling as we think. You know, reminding ourselves, yes, sure, okay, look at your closet full of old electronics. Those make you happy, you know, or remembering, you know, in the past when you've, you know, gotten something new and then it's not very satisfying anymore or whatever.
So these hindrances, they presuppose that you have a spiritual practice, because if you didn't have something you really valued, how would these be hindrances, right? Most people would say these are worthy things to have for your family or yourself, or it's the American dream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you, they're only hindrances. Because if you didn't do that, what would you do? So it seems like the Buddha is saying that if you want to practice or get enlightenment, then these are hindrances. Or is it a hindrance to your own happiness?
I don't know. Don't you think some of the things we've talked about, whether you had a spiritual practice or not, would still be a hindrance?
Yes.
Almost all of the negative consequences are synonyms for dukkha, right? Which, I suppose if you recognize dukkha, you already have a spiritual practice in a way, but that's a fairly universal value set, right?
Right.
I suppose that luckily I don't have a spiritual practice, they can fool themselves for a long time chasing after these things, and then eventually they might finally realize that it's not bringing them satisfaction, and they start looking for what's actually important. And then a lot of people would like maybe join spirituality after they come to that point, but it's their average person.
Mm-hmm.
Or they become self-destructive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have people in my life that I wouldn't say had any kind of spiritual aspiration, but I think this would still make sense to them to notice when you're getting pulled into sensual desire, worldly obsession to a kind of an excessive amount that, you know, if you look at that image of the river, you know, flowing along, and whatever gets dumped in the river just gets flown along, but if the river gets too dissipated, it kind of loses its steam. And that would be true of anyone.
It's obvious when the harm is to you or to your loved ones, and it's obvious, right? But when you're just indulging it, reaching an afternoon is not
no
sin, right? Except no. If you remember that life and death are the great matter, right?
Yeah. That's what I'm kind of raising the bar in terms of what, you know, how free you want to be and how much choice you want to have and how you spend your attention and time. So the fifth, and it's kind of two, but I threw them together. The fifth way to work on the hindrances, this is kind of my favorite, noble friendship and suitable conversation. And these are the two, I mean, mindful awareness is applies to all, mindful awareness and nutriments applies to all the hindrances, so we'll be covering those again. But the noble friendship and suitable conversation also appears as the antidote to all of the hindrances. So I like to think that's what we're doing here tonight. You know, that we can get lost in our hindrances in our lives, but then, all right, you know, we come together with people with similar aspirations and people who aren't like, yeah, that's awesome, you should get that, you know, who are similarly caught in the same hindrance. And, yeah. All right, well, thank you all for...